It's Friday, the 30th of August, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, could a prisoner swap deal between Russia and Ukraine be back on?
I think there is every possibility that the prisoner swap could take place because they've firmed up the numbers. Initially, people said it would be 33 for 33, but Ukraine has said it should be 35. So the puzzle's coming together.
Plus, chaos in Westminster as MPs rush to block a no-deal Brexit. What to expect from Italy's new government? And Monocle's Robert Bound examines the state of pop music fandom. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Ukraine has released the Russian journalist Kirill Vyshinsky more than a year after he was jailed on charges of treason. Reports this week suggested that a planned prisoner swap might help improve relations between Kiev and Moscow. However, it's unclear whether the swap will go ahead or how many individuals it might involve. Monocle's Melkon Charchoglian has been following the story. Mel, what do we know at the moment about Vyshinsky's release?
So he was released in Kiev on Wednesday. He still faces charges of treason and unlawfully carrying arms against the state. And I say treason because he is a Ukrainian and Russian citizen, though he impersonally sees himself as a Russian subject. So he will still need to argue against those charges, and he might yet face 15 years. There was the possibility of him being part of the exchange, the 35 for 35, which would have seen him automatically freed of those charges. But he is so adamant that he's innocent that he wants to disprove them properly in the courts rather than have them dropped.
So he's out on parole at the moment. And there's also talk now of Russia potentially releasing the Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov. What do we know about that? Is this an indication, perhaps, that the prisoner swap could actually take place?
I think there is every possibility that the prisoner swap could take place because they've firmed up the numbers. Initially, people said it would be 33 for 33, but Ukraine has said it should be 35. So the puzzle's coming together. I would be skeptical about Sentsov being released. The reports of him being transferred from a prison in the Arctic to Moscow have not been confirmed by the Kremlin. These are independent media reports from unnamed sources. That's typical in Russia. These sources are probably very reliable, but still, until the Kremlin says, yes, this has happened, there's no indication of him actually being potentially released. But it's very good news that he is being transported to the capital. It suggests that something is afoot.
Melkon Charchoglian, thank you. The United Kingdom will, from today, stop attending most meetings held by the European Union. The move comes as Britain reels from the controversy surrounding Boris Johnson's plan to suspend Parliament in a bid to ensure that MPs have as little time as possible to prevent the UK leaving the European Union without a deal. The extraordinary plan quickly prompted outrage and questions of whether it fits with the spirit of democracy. Lord Ming Campbell is a former leader of the Liberal Democrats Party. He told Monocle why, in ordinary circumstances, a prorogation before a Queen's speech would not be unusual.
Well, it's essential in order to allow the government to place before the Queen, who reads it solemnly from the throne in the House of Lords, the programme which the government intends to follow. But of course, it's a convention which is usually applied in what one might say are ordinary circumstances. But these are not ordinary circumstances that we're dealing with at the moment. The fact of the matter is that what the Prime Minister is seeking to do, and indeed has done, because of course, by convention, if a Prime Minister asks for a prorogation, then the monarch, the Queen, who after all was in a holiday home in Scotland, is by convention obliged to award a prorogation. But what he has sought to do is to tie in to the 3 weeks which we have off for the party conferences by tradition by squeezing, first of all, the fortnight. We're due to go back next week. We would normally do a fortnight and then the 3 weeks, and then we go back after that. So what he's done is he's taken a week out of the next fortnight and more than a week out of the time at which we would normally go back. What is really interesting, of course, is that there are a number of people in all three political parties who wanted to argue that the party conferences should either be truncated or perhaps even cancelled altogether in order to allow as much time as possible to consider the implications if, as people now more confidently predict, we leave without a deal on the 31st of October.
Crucially, of course, the prorogation of Parliament doesn't entirely remove the chances of MPs blocking a no-deal Brexit. But, as Lord Campbell explains, it won't make things any easier.
If opposition parties put up something to which the government takes great objection, then they can use delay. Delay in the British system is often a very, very powerful political weapon. Indeed, you can do that by filibustering, by raising points of order, by trying to make people sit through the night. All kinds of devices are available if a government wants to prevent the opposition making a serious intermission into the usual circumstances, which are that a government is normally entitled to get its business. On this occasion, what may happen in the House of Commons, what is to be sought, is that the House of Commons gets control, as it were, of the business. And to do that, it has to pass a particular motion at a particular time. It's all a bit complicated, but if it passes that motion, changes the standing orders, then at that stage it is possible for the House, as it were, to take control of the order paper.
Lord Campbell there. In other words, there is still time for MPs to stop Boris Johnson taking Britain out of the European Union without a deal. But there are also ways in which the Prime Minister and his pro-Brexit allies could make things difficult. Britain is due to leave the European Union on the 31st of October. Both sides are likely to act very quickly. Italy's Prime Minister says he'll turn the country's recent political crisis into an opportunity as he accepted an offer by the Italian president to form a new governing coalition. Monocle's Chiara Remella is here. Chiara, Giuseppe Conte is back, but this is a different government.
It is indeed, and I think it's interesting how the two different parties that make up the coalition want it to be in relation to the previous government. Now, naturally, because the Movement 5 Stars was part of the previous coalition as well, they don't want to completely go back on everything they've done in the previous year, but they have to put themselves in some way in opposition to what that was. The Democratic Party definitely wants to see a sharp difference compared to what the previous government was, and we will probably see some of that in a number of policies. Is one of the first few things that that Conte has been talking about is a renewed interest in making Italy a sustainable country, so a renewed interest in the environment. One thing that he has not mentioned, and that will be very decisive in terms of understanding how really different this government will be to the previous one, is in its attitude to the security issue, so the migrant situation, because naturally that was one of the main points that Salvini really went very, very strongly on. We'll see whether this government will be able to change course completely on that.
Well, another way they'll have to change course is in the stability of the government. I mean, the last coalition was famously, divisive in its running of the country. Do you suspect that this coalition will be a little bit more stable than what we saw previously?
There are certain affinities within the interests of these two parties, but they have been historically really at odds with each other, virtually enemies. The Movement 5 Stars was basically founded in opposition to parties like the Democratic Party and Berlusconi's party as well. So there are issues at the very core of this alliance that have got to do with the identity of the parties. Short-lived governments aren't necessarily rare in Italy, so anything that lasts more than 1-2 years is already quite a good result. We'll see how long it will last, but in essence, this alliance feels a little bit less stretched than what Movement 5 Stars and Lega had going on in the previous year.
Chiara, always a pleasure to get your insights. Chiara Remella. Finally today, Monocle's senior editor Robert Bound examines the state of pop fandom.
"25 years ago this week, Oasis released Definitely Maybe, an album that's been described as seminal and visceral more times than Bad Boy band-leading brothers Noel and Liam Gallagher have used the F-word in interviews or smoked, back then anyway, packs of Benson and Hedges.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized.
The Oasis debut became the UK's fastest selling album until 2006, sparked into life by three great singles, genuine rock and roll attitude, and a campaign of belligerent band baiting in interviews.
What do you think of Blur these days?
Well, not a lot. Yeah, I'm not in competition anymore with a Blur and that. Blur is Blur. You know what I mean? It took them 5 years to get number one, right? It took us fucking 12 months, yeah?
I bought Definitely Maybe sometime that month, and as a nice boy from Sussex at school in Leafy, Surrey, Mad, Bad, Dangerous to Know, Mancunian Oasis were a thrill like nothing else, equally intimidating and enthralling. Music was tribal. Bands and their fans were gangs. People that liked Blur were dicks. People that liked Suede, ponces. And people that liked Pulp were artists, or something equally unforgivably fey. American music simply didn't exist anymore for a 15-year-old in Britain. The 41-year-old writing this is not as ashamed of that dumb partisanship as you might think. Music meant more because we had to buy it. Colours were nailed to masts. Sleeve notes pored over, lyrics, inflections, hairstyles and walks practised in mirrors. We used to swagger around the 16th century quad at school, flicking V signs at each other, for God's sake. Actually, that is embarrassing. But the point stands, and I miss this. We all like a bit of Taylor Swift and Stormzy and The Weeknd, but what do we love and how do we show it? Tribalism's awful, right? Right. But I miss it. For Monocle, I'm Robert Bound.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Rylan. The Monocle Minute will be back on Monday.